Welcome to the Voice of Truth on 103.3 WKMZ-FM, the radio broadcast ministry of Christian Apostolic Church in Clarksburg, West Virginia. And now your host, author, pastor, and teacher, Doug Joseph.
Hello and welcome to our broadcast. I'm so thankful to have with us all the way down from Massachusetts, my good friend, longtime friend, Reverend John F. Harrison. And we were just a moment ago reminiscing about how many years it's been since we first met one another on the Men's Ministry Forum of the United Pentecostal Church International. And by our best guesstimate, we think that was something to the tune of 25 years ago. And you were mentioning that you had hair back then. I had considerably more hair back then. Welcome. We are so thankful to have you here. And you drove down, long drive down, and you have a really nice, is your BMW considered an antique now, or is it?
It could be, because Massachusetts says 25 years and up is an antique if you want to do that. Mine is 29.
Wow.
And I don't have antique plates because that limits how much you can drive it.
And you do not want limits on how much you can drive it.
That's right.
You took the scenic route with the tight hairpin curves and everything, and you got something like, what, like a quarter of a million miles on that thing or something now?
231,000 and some change. 231, 132, something like that.
Wow.
And I feel like I'm just breaking it in. I've known people who've taken them close to a million miles.
And you told me last night that at this point the wheels are worth more than the car.
In terms of book value, yes. Because, you know, a blue book just straight line depreciates the car and never lets it. But as a somewhat collectible, classic, you know, vintage BMW, it does have value to collectors and enthusiasts, and I could sell that car tomorrow for several times more than its blue book value. I'm actually in the process of trying to get an insurance company to give me an agreed upon value for the car, again, without limiting how much I can drive it.
Gotcha.
So it's kind of a balancing act, but yes, I got a set of wheels for it. Years ago, I paid $800 for the wheels at the time that I bought them. They're no longer made. They're getting harder and harder to find. The wheels alone are now worth in the vicinity of $4,000.
Wow.
So.
And so here we are for our Voice of Truth radio broadcast interview. And I'm hoping that we can get to talk about your book series of novels that you have out, and also some financial advice for families. And maybe we could hit young families and also families that need to be thinking about retirement. I guess that's all families, though, probably, right?
It is.
And so catch us up on, I think we talked a little bit about your writing the last time we had an interview together, but catch us up on your book series.
The series of novels is called the Solid Rock Survivor Series, and it's Christian fiction, a little unusual for Christian fiction. And what I like about it is there's a couple of themes that run through the books in the series. Now, they're all standalone books, so if you start with book two, that's fine. You're not going to miss out not having read book one, but you can read them in any order. But what they have in common is, one, each one is in some way centered around a different biblical parable. In book one, it was the literal reenactment of the parable of the prodigal son. Book two is a different parable, and it's not a reenactment, but the parable figures into the characters dealing with the situation that she has going on in her life. Her understanding of the parable helps her through it. And book three is in the works, and I hope to have it out by December of 2025. So there will be three total in the series. And the way I describe them to people is they're Christian fiction, but they're not too sweet. And what I mean, some of you will remember that turn of phrase from the old Canada Dry commercials, it's not too sweet. But what I mean by that is sometimes Christian fiction can feel a little, for lack of a better word, a little precious, a little, you know, what I've written, I think, is clean and biblical, but it's gritty enough to actually resemble the real world.
Yeah.
And I like that approach to things. It makes it stand out a little bit. And I've talked about things in these books that every Christian deals with, but that we generally don't talk about with each other.
Yeah.
And so it's, I think, makes for an interesting read. The most recent book in the series is called Kindred Spirits, and it is the story of a woman who was a minor player in book one. She only made about two appearances. And in book two, she's the main character, and she's dealing with a whole lot of things. And she's got issues at church and issues with neighbors and some real peril as things develop. And so I think it makes for an interesting read. And I guarantee you that it has at least a surprise or two that you won't see coming.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun. So Kindred Spirits by John F. Harrison is book two of the Solid Rock Survivor series. And if I can say so myself, I think it's a lot of fun.
Yes, sir. You are phenomenal. I've really admired your professionalism and methodical process and attention to detail. And that's revealed in how long you spend developing one of the novels and how long you spend perfecting it and how long you spend getting it published. But you have been really great at character development. Give the folks a little bit of backstory on some of the main characters.
All right. In book one, which was called Fighting Back, the main character is a young man of 28 named Eddie Carruthers. And he's just a typical church member trying to make his way in the world, and finds himself through no fault of his own having to defend a friend from some bad behavior on the street. And the fallout from that keeps multiplying. And so what you follow is his dealing with the things that arise as a result of the actions he took with this confrontation. And it gets pretty intense, and what you find as you read the book that he actually is the character who represents the prodigal son in the parable, and it's, I think, unusual to have the story of the prodigal son told from the point of view of the prodigal, and it shows how he got where he got, and I guess I was interested in that. Primarily because we always, when we preach the parable or teach the parable, we generally just sum him up with a sentence or two and say, well, you know, he was a bad guy, didn't respect his father, and he left. And I wanted to back up and figure out, how did he become that person? And we know that the actual subject of the prodigal son parable is not the prodigal, it's his elder brother. And so I started from the premise that maybe the elder brother was the reason the prodigal left in the first place and took things from there. So it became an interesting story. So in the second book, Kindred Spirits, Eddie is a minor character, and the main character is Rosalind, who is the person Eddie was defending in book one. And she's having her own series of trials and tribulations while Eddie is off being the prodigal, and that's what you see in her book, Kindred Spirits. And she's probably the nicest, sweetest, most inoffensive person you could ever hope to meet. But she is forced to do some growing and toughening as life goes on. And she ends up confronting some surprising things. And when she does, she realizes she's stronger than she thought she was. And that's sort of the story of Kindred Spirits. It's titled that because it follows a bunch of people, different people, who are very much like each other. Kindred spirits are people who share many or great commonalities. And so you meet a few, and then she ends up using the concept to apply in a completely different way to a whole group of people who she sees as kindred spirits. And I won't say more than that to avoid giving away any major plot points, but it was fun writing her book. It was very different than the Eddie book. And for those of you who have read either of those, book three that's coming out is the Bowers book. We have one on Eddie, one on Roz, and Reverend Greg Bowers is both of their, or was both of their pastor. And he hasn't always been a positive force in book one and two. And book three will talk about how he became who he is and what comes of him and that sort of thing. So I think it'll be a nice ending to the series.
Awesome.
And I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, sir. Awesome. And regarding financials, I kind of had tossed a couple of potential questions at you. And one of them is to get, and let me mention for anyone that is new to John F. Harrison, he is heard nationally on different syndicated radio broadcast TV shows. He is an author of financial books. And he is the founder of Aspire Financial Services, and he is a certified financial planner. And he's an absolute genius. He's someone that I look to for guidance with regard to finances. And so if you could give us, in your expert opinion, kind of the downstream washout effect that COVID has had and where that has positioned families, especially with regard to getting by and with regard to any potential detriment regarding their financial planning for retirement, and kind of any advice that you want to throw in along the way.
Sure. I'm reminded of a famous quote from Ronald Reagan back in the day. And he said that the scariest words in the English language are, "I'm from the government, I'm here to help." And when it comes to COVID and your finances, it wasn't so much what COVID did that hurt your finances. It was the government attempt to help.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we reaped from that attempt to help was massive inflation. They were literally printing money in the sense that, you know, there was the COVID relief checks and there was all sorts of extended unemployment. And I don't dispute that some of that was necessary, but there is a predictable outfall from all that money printing, and
yeah,
that's inflation. And we've seen that. In June a year ago, the inflation rate, the CPI in this country, hit 9.1%. That's astounding.
Yeah.
And at 9%, just to give you the math, the price of everything doubles in 8 years. Now, fortunately, it didn't stay at 9%. It's come down. But the cumulative effect of the inflation over the past year has raised prices significantly on almost everything, particularly in the areas of housing, transportation, and food. If you've been to a grocery store,
yeah,
you know what food has done. And so the big effect that we are looking at is that prices have gone up far faster than wages have gone up. So you need to spend, I think the average family needs to spend four figures more this year than last year just to keep the same standard of living. And what's happening, if they're not skimping on food and shelter and things like that, it means they're not saving what they should be for retirement. They're struggling perhaps with paying college loans. They're struggling with making car payments. Everything has been rough. The main takeaway for most people, if 2, 3, 4 years ago you made some projections about what your retirement would look like and what it would cost, and from there you backed up to, all right, how much do I need to accumulate in order to pay those costs going forward? Now you need to recalculate those.
Got you.
Even though inflation is coming down as a rate, actual prices aren't coming down. That's a different thing.
Yeah.
And so we're starting from a higher number in terms of prices. Your projections will have to be for higher numbers. It may not change what you have to invest in, but it will almost certainly change how much you have to invest.
Yeah.
And that's the main takeaway for most people. You can't just coast on the savings rate, the investment rate that you had,
yeah,
because your life is going to cost you more than was anticipated when you first made plans.
So, you know, you've seen those video clips of a guy with a table with some rods on the table, and he's got plates, and he's keeping the plates spinning. For so many of us, that's exactly what our financial life is like.
Yes.
One of the plates is food. One of the plates is housing. One of the plates is just everything associated with living. Another one of the plates is trying to get debt paid off. Another one of the plates is trying to plan for retirement. And there's a limit to how many plates a single human being can spin. And when it comes to finances, there are limits to how many plates a single family can keep spinning. And I think in our case, in my case, everything that I can possibly be doing for my retirement, I'm already doing. And based on what you're saying, I'm I think I would be fairly accurate to say that my previous projections have now had holes blown in them by the inflationary detriment downstream from COVID. And since I don't have any more I can throw at it, there's not anything left for me to do. I'm already doing the best I can. And so it probably will mean that I'm going to need more of God's blessing and help, and I'm probably going to have to work longer and just find ways to try to deal with the detriment. Regarding that, I know one of the things that I've heard you kind of teach and preach often about this is about the danger of panic sell-off when things are rough. When things are in a downward mega trend and people are panicking, you can really make some dumb mistakes with your investing. And I've always taken that to heart. And basically, pretty much no matter what financial storm was happening in the world, I have not panicked. In fact, I've given almost no thought to what my bottom line currently is at the moment. And I just keep plugging away. And talk a little bit about whether or not you have seen any evidence of, you know, panic moves by people, and whether or not a person would have been best just to keep the same course, or should there have been some adjustments made, that kind of thing.
Yes. Being reactive emotionally is very natural and almost always very bad.
Yeah.
And so for most people, the best thing to do is stay the course. If you had a logical and sensible plan to start with, it's still logical and sensible even when things are going wrong in the market. I have one client in particular who perfectly illustrates this. He's been a client for, I want to say, 5 or 6 years at this point. Maybe more like 7 or 8. And he had about $700,000 or so under our care. And when the pandemic started, of course, no one knew what was going to happen. And there were dire predictions everywhere. This is the end of civilization as we know it. It's, you know. And he had moved overseas and was trying to build a house where he was. And he needed a certain amount of additional money to do that. And he just insisted when the pandemic hit, he went to cash. And, you know, it's always the client's money, so I can't say, no, you can't do that. But, you know, I strongly counsel people, don't want to do that, because none of us know the future. And it's normally not as bad as we feel like it's going to be. So he went to cash and he stayed that way for a year. And then he realized, okay, the world hasn't ended, and he went back to what he had. And I'm not usually an I-told-you-so kind of person, but I wanted to show him in practical terms what this meant. And so I said, if we had simply left everything as it was before the pandemic and let it sail through, as of this date, your investment growth would have been enough to pay for the house you're trying to save for.
Wow.
It would have covered all the costs.
And just for anyone who's trying to follow along and not sure of the terms, when you say he went to cash, you mean he sold off?
He sold everything we had, all the securities, the stocks, the bonds, all of that was sold off and ended up sitting in what amounts to a bank account.
Yeah. So he liquidated his investments, converted them into cash, which meant that he stopped gaining any benefit from them being invested.
Right.
Okay. And so in the time he stayed out, the benefit that he missed was enough to have paid for his house.
Yes, he could have built his house for about $250,000, and that's the amount of gain he lost. I didn't use any general math. I looked at the actual investments he'd had.
Wow.
And said, given their performance over the last year, this is how much they'd be worth today.
Wow.
He could have simply withdrawn the cash and paid for the house and still had his original principal. So I think he learned a viable lesson, and there have been some scares in the market since then, which he has ignored. And,
good.
You know, so it's a tough lesson for most people, but it's understandable that your instinct is to protect yourself against short-term losses. Fluctuations are scary, and you want to avoid them, but what you invariably end up doing is missing the gains that come after the losses.
Yeah.
And you can be too conservative. I think the parable of the talent sort of illustrates that. And when the third guy says, well, you know, I knew all these things about you, so I did the same thing. I buried your money. here's what you gave me back. And the Lord wasn't happy with that.
Yeah.
And so we have a tendency to want to do that, but it's a good thing to resist the temptation.
So talk a little bit about the difference between the micro view of what happens on the stock market and investments versus the macro view.
Yes. The micro view is what you get on the news. Today, the Dow was off sharply on rumors that the Dow would be off sharply. That's kind of what the micro news looks like.
Yeah.
We can get fixated on what happened today. What do you think is going to happen tomorrow? And you turn into the short-term traders and day traders, and you wreck yourself financially.
Yeah.
What's important to know is that over the long term, the averages will take care of you. Now, there's one major exception to that, and I'll come back to that. But for people who are in the accumulation stage, your retirement is 20, 15, 10 years away. You can afford to let the averages take care of you. And over time, it's amazing the returns you get. I was looking just a few minutes ago at the fact that at the bottom of the Great Recession, 2008-2009, we had reached 6,000 and change on the Dow. I think it was 6,600 was the closing price of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. Well, today we're above 38,000. We're racing to 40.
Wow.
And that seems so far removed from 6,000. And that was just in 2009. So over 15 years, we've gone from 6,000 to almost 40.
Wow.
And if you go backwards, it's what the market has always done. Yeah. In 1932, the lowest point on the Dow was 32. That was the closing number. And then from then, through the various wars, through the recessions, through the political scandals, through presidential assassinations, all the horrible things that rocked the markets, we've still managed to climb to where we are now. I always tell people the long term, the market looks like a man playing with a yo-yo while climbing a flight of stairs.
Yeah.
Short term, all you see is up, down, up, down, up, down.
Yeah,
but long term, the trend is up.
Is upwards. That is such a great analogy. And, you know, it occurs to me that scientists have discovered that that same kind of thing exists in the real world with regard to if you zoom in close, I mean, like, you know, super close, you know, down to the quantum mechanics level, a surface that to the normal observer looks smooth as glass has got all this volatility going on. But when you back away from it, it looks perfectly smooth. And some people, I think, obsess with zooming in too tightly on their view of what's happening in the stock market because they have a vested interest because they've got something invested and they're concerned.
Yes.
But because of their concern, they obsess. They zoom in too close. They see all that close-up volatility when if they would back off and take the 30,000 feet overview and look at it from a distance, it's a glass smooth increase. And that's one of the things that anybody that's new in investing really needs to learn and take to heart. Otherwise, your whole life of trying to make some gains from the stock market, it can either be harrowing, terrifying, heart attack inducing, or you can just back off and trust the history and not bother about it. And that's what I've tried to do.
Yes.
I'm so not bothered about it that I don't even know. I don't have any idea what's going on. Maybe once a year or once every other year, I take a glance at it.
That's really the best thing for most people. I remember an ad campaign that Fidelity Investments did years ago, probably decades at this point. And it was a magazine page with 64 square pictures in it. Each of them was a picture of the sunrise, and at slightly different times, 5:59 a.m., 6:03 a.m., and all these different times across 64 square pictures. And at the bottom, it had a disclaimer that we are always required to use in financial services. And it said, past performance is no guarantee of future results, but what else is there to go by? And I love that, you know, the sun rises. And so we really do need to develop that mindset. And the only exception to that, the only caveat I would put in that, is the person who has reached the point where they need to start taking withdrawals. Because then the averages aren't quite the same. Now sequence of returns matters when you're taking money out.
Yeah.
So it can be very bad, for instance, if you start withdrawing at age 67 and the first 2 or 3 years of the market returns are bad, now you get the spiral going where you can't recover and you run out of money pretty quickly. So what I always tell people is when you're getting to that point, you need to have some cushion in place. You need to have 2 years worth of your expenses in cash. And that way, if it's a bad year in the market, you don't have to make a withdrawal. You could simply live on the accumulated cash.
I got you.
There are some things like that to keep in mind when you're at that point. But for everybody else, like your 401k, you're not constantly, if you have a job that gives you a 401k, you're not constantly starting and stopping that. It's just you let it go, and then the average takes care of you.
Right.
And that's the approach I recommend for most people.
What great wisdom. That is tremendous. Real quickly, for anyone who needs someone to be a trusted partner with regard to their finances and their retirement and their estate planning, tell folks how they can get in touch with you. Just kind of put in a plug for
yourself. Sure. I'd be happy to help or talk to anyone who wants to talk about any of these issues. And the easiest way to find me is online. I'm at aspirefa.com. That's aspirefa.com is my website. Email is john.harrison@aspirefa.com. Or you can just call the office phone like in the old days, 978-775-5435. And with any of those methods, I'll be happy to chat with you and see if I can impart something that might be helpful to you.
Awesome. I'm so thankful for all of your invaluable and tremendous help with regard to our retirement. And you've also given some great help and advice to our church. And so for anyone listening that is a pastor or a trustee, or you're involved with the financial oversight of a church, I do want to mention that you really ought to connect. Not only is John F. Harrison certified financial planner, but he's also an ordained minister of the gospel. And he has a tremendous love for the kingdom of God and for churches, and he has been a tremendous help. Our church has made some really important and crucial moves, and it was invaluable for us to have his counsel and his guidance, and not only that, but his creativity. We didn't come to him and say, "Do you think this is a wise move?" We came to him and said, "Here's the situation. Here's the reality. Here's the problem. And here's what we hope to reach as a goal." And he showed us 2 or 3 different ways to make that happen and the possible problems, the pros and cons of each, and which one he leaned toward, and then left us with the decision. But we then made informed decisions. So he's not going to try to relieve you of any responsibility for your actions, but he is a resource to help you make the most informed decision about what you're trying to accomplish. And that way, if it turns out wonderful, and if it doesn't, you still, your church is still going to bear responsibility for any detriment that comes about related to the market as it affects your decision. But you will know that you made the most informed decision possible based on the different scenarios. And from someone who's not in that world, we did not have any clue. We did not have any idea what the possible ways were to go about this. He brought some amazing ideas to the table that we had never heard of. And people say, "Well, what about Google?" I'm going to tell you, it does not matter that you have access to Google. If you don't have the training that this man has, the years of training and decades of experience, Google cannot in any way make up for that. And with a selfless heart and a desire to help people, I'm telling you, you really need to get your church in contact with Aspire Financial Services and John F. Harrison. Well, we're about out of time. This has been a tremendous few minutes of an interview for yet another wonderful installation of wisdom from John F. Harrison. Thank you. Thank you so much for being our friend, and thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
God bless you in Jesus' name.
Thank you for listening.
You can reach us online at cac.us.com. Catch the Voice of Truth broadcast each Sunday morning at 11:30 right here on Talk Radio 103.3 WKMZ-FM.